We are talking about communication. So we're talking about how we talk. And last time I mentioned that what we're kind of focusing on is some lessons on communication from the life of Jesus. So we're talking about how we communicate, and we're doing it from the life of Jesus. Last time, Daryl shared with you last week, and I was the week before that. So, last time we talked about saying what you mean.
Last week I did not talk about talking.
Yeah, last week he just talked. He didn't talk about talking. Okay. Now we're going to talk, but we're going to talk about talking. So, we covered the topic of say what you mean. Say what you mean, right? Tonight we have a new topic, which we will get to. But every week I want to remind us of a reality, because I think it's really important that we get this cemented into our head, and that is that the goal in communication tends to be different for men and women. We mentioned this last time, and so we're going to mention it again. Men communicate to give and receive information, right? That's what we do. It is the import and export, right? That's how we communicate. Women, on the other hand, communicate to connect. Okay? And as we mentioned last time, this is why, you know, when you ask your wife a question about what Bill does for a living, she tells you about Sally's hairdresser appointment, and you have no idea why you're talking about Sally in order to talk about Bill, right? But that's because they're connecting. They're not just giving information, right? And we mention that because that affects all of our relationships. It affects how we talk to our children. It affects how we talk to our neighbor, how we talk to our spouse. So we need to be aware of that reality. Before we get into our topic for tonight, we're going to look at another example in Scripture where communication isn't done well. Okay, last time we talked about Jesus turning the water into wine, and Mary comes up to him and she says, "We're out of wine," right? And I said, now if she had come up to me and said we were out of wine, I'd have said, "And?" Right? But Jesus ends up turning the water into wine. Tonight we're going to be in Acts for just a minute, Acts chapter 12. And in Acts chapter 12, Peter has been put in prison, and he gets miraculously released from prison, right? An angel appears to him, his chains fall off, the doors of the prison open, and he walks out. And he goes to a house where they're having a prayer meeting, much like we are tonight. And they're praying for Peter's release. And what we're going to read is what happens when Peter shows up at this house. Acts chapter 12, verse 12. "So when he had considered this, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a girl named Rhoda came to answer. When she recognized Peter's voice, because of her gladness, she did not open the gate, but ran in and announced that Peter stood before the gate. But they said to her, 'You are beside yourself.' Yet she kept insisting that it was so. So they said, 'It is his angel.' Now Peter continued knocking, and when they opened the door, they saw him and were astonished." Several things happen here. First of all, she doesn't open the door for Peter. I personally have always found that rather humorous. Here's Peter knocking on the door, and she's so excited, she just runs back in, right? And she tells them all, Peter's standing at the door. And they tell her, "You're nuts. You're crazy. You've lost your mind." So here's poor Rhoda, right? She is clear. She's concise. She's truthful. She's communicating well. And no one believes her. Yeah, because in that day and age, really, it was because she was a woman, right? And so they think she's crazy. They tell her, "Well, you know what? You saw his ghost," because they're expecting him to be killed. So here's what we learn from Rhoda. It's a really important lesson. Communication is not easy, right? Because you can be clear, and you can be concise, and you can be truthful, and still not be believed, right? Because communication is not easy, it takes consistent and persistent work in order to communicate well. So, we want to seek to improve in this area, and that is the purpose behind this study that we're doing. Why are we talking about communication? Because we want to improve. We want to be able to communicate effectively with one another as a church, with our spouses as married couples, with our children as parents, and with those around us as friends and neighbors. So, we are going to be tonight in Matthew chapter 8. Again, we're learning lessons on communication from the life of Jesus. Matthew chapter 8. Jesus has just finished what is commonly called the Sermon on the Mount. In the beginning of chapter 8, he cleanses the leper. And then we come to our passage in Matthew chapter 8, beginning there in verse 5. We're going to look at verses 5 through 10. Matthew chapter 8, beginning in verse 5. Matthew chapter 8, verse 5. Now when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented." And Jesus said to him, "I will come and heal him." Then the centurion answered and said, "Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak a word and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this one, 'Go,' and he goes, and to another, 'Come,' and he comes, and to my servant, 'Do this,' and he does it." When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." Today, our topic is praise the praiseworthy. Praise the praiseworthy. Praising the praiseworthy, we're going to learn tonight, is a three-step process, and we're going to look at those steps. So we're going to talk about praise the praiseworthy, but first, I'm going to tell you a story. This is a made-up story from things that have actually happened. Okay, so while Mom and Dad were gone, the kids cleaned the entire house. And when I say the entire house, I mean the entire house. They washed all of the dishes. They scrubbed the countertops. They vacuumed and swept the floors. They dusted the furniture. They thoroughly washed the bathrooms and the showers. They even wiped down the cupboard doors and the baseboards. And they were so excited. They couldn't wait for Mom and Dad to come home. They just knew they were going to love it. They were going to be so grateful and appreciative. And eventually, the time arrived and the car pulls into the garage and the door opens and they come in and they look around and Mom looks at her kids and says, "Well, why didn't you start the dishwasher?" Instantly crushed, the children slowly go to their rooms, and the end of this whole affair is that these children say, "We are never going to surprise Mom and Dad again." Now, this is the kind of scenario that brings us to our topic of praising the praiseworthy. All right? While we may recognize that Mom didn't handle that very well, right? We need to understand that what could have been done differently, right? And how that would have impacted the outcome. Now, trust me when I say the story was made up. Okay, my mom always responded wonderfully if we did things like that. But I know people whose didn't. Okay? And I know people who were told things like that when they would try to do something special. So we need to understand how communicating praise is important to our communication with other people. So we're going to repeat the same pattern as last week. We're going to begin by observing what Jesus did in this passage. So there's three ways that we want to copy what Jesus did. And the first is, we want to be approachable. We want to be approachable. In this passage, a centurion comes to Jesus. And you say, okay, so what? That's actually really significant. First of all, because Jesus is a Jew, and the centurion would have been a Gentile. Right there, you have not only differences in ethnicity and nationality, you have differences in social standing, and you have differences in complete world views. One, the Romans are subjugating the Jews, okay? Secondly, you have Jesus, who is a rabbi, And this man who is a Roman soldier. So there's another level of spiritual conflict that would have been present as well. Okay? From a human perspective, Jesus had every reason to just ignore the centurion. Okay? But he didn't. Jesus doesn't blow him off because of who he is. What instead, Jesus teaches us a really important lesson. Two of them. The first is this. We need to see past the exterior to the deeper need. See past the exterior to the deeper need. This is necessary if we're going to communicate well. You are going to run into people whose appearance makes you go, ugh, right? Or makes you go, and you have to communicate with them anyway, like Jesus does here. There's a second part to this. And that is that we need to see past the irritant to what's going on inside. See past the irritant to what's going on inside. Both of these are necessary. Don't focus on the exterior. Don't be distracted by something that is irritating. Look for the deeper need. Look for what's going on inside of the person. Each of us has a need to be appreciated, right? This is where praising the praiseworthy comes from. And we need to see past the exterior, and here's what that looks like. I'm going to give you some examples. Example number one, the friend who won't leave. Growing up, we had a friend who wouldn't leave, right? He would come to our house as soon after breakfast or school as he could and would stay until Dad said, well, we're all going to bed. It's time for you to head home, okay? Now, when something like that happens, you have two options. One, you can get irritated. Why won't this kid just stay at his own house, right? Or two, you can see the deeper need. Why did this young boy live at our house for probably 10 years of my life, pretty much? Why? Because at his home, he felt unsafe, he felt unloved, and he felt uncared for. And when he would come to our house, he was fed, right? He was talked to, and he was valued. So there was a deeper need. There, we could have focused on the irritant. We could have focused on the exterior. Instead, we said, here's a young person with a need, and they're welcome anytime, right? So try to see the deeper need. Jesus did this with the centurion. He looked past the exterior. So you have the friend who won't leave. Then you have the child who always resists. Right? Anybody have a kid like this? You tell them to go left and they go right. You tell them to put on their red shoes and they put on the black ones, right? Whatever you say, they have this resistant attitude, right? As an adult, you give them advice and they do the opposite, right? You try to share with them and it just seems to bounce off. And you always feel like they're pushing you away. And this can be frustrating, right? It can be irritating. But there's something we have to remember. There is a deeper need in this child. Most of the time, what they are wanting to know is, if I push you, will you still love me? Are you still going to pursue me? Are you still going to be there? Right? They are resisting to see if the love changes when they don't perform. Okay? We do this to God. We push back on him. And he keeps loving us anyway, right? Keeps pursuing us. Will we love them when they are irritating? Right? Third example, the spouse that shuts down. You want to talk about something and they walk away. You try to connect or converse and they are not interested. What is going on here? Chances are there is a deeper need that is not being met. This centurion had a surface need, right? He had a servant who was sick. Okay? But it seems he also had a deeper need because Jesus praises this man's faith. There was a deeper need to be appreciated and recognized by Jesus. Our spouses need to know that when they talk to us, when they share with us, they will be safe. Here's what I mean. When a spouse shares, listen. Let me read it again. When a spouse shares, listen. Don't problem solve. Okay? Don't belittle. Don't minimize what they are saying. Don't explain it away. Definitely don't put them down. Listen to what they're saying. Why? Because we create safety when there is love and acceptance regardless of performance. Okay? Marriage is a picture of Christ in the church, right? Does Christ love us only when we perform? No. Now, there are consequences for our bad behavior, and relationships suffer when we're not fellowshipping well. But there needs to be love and acceptance regardless of performance if we're going to communicate well. If we're going to be approachable, we have to see past the exterior to the deeper need, and we have to see past the irritant to what's going on inside. Here's the connection, right? If we're going to praise someone for what is praiseworthy, we have to hear what they're saying. We have to be around them. We can't be so irritated with them that we're never in their presence. Okay? If we're always irritated, we can't see the positive qualities that they have. We have to be approachable. And so, our lesson from this is this. A relationship of connection and encouragement requires that we be open and approachable. This goes for all of our relationships. It doesn't matter if we're talking about a spouse or a child, even if they're an adult child, or a friend, right? If we're going to have connection and encouragement, we have to be open and approachable to them. They have to know that they can come and talk to us, and we're not going to bite their head off, right? Or we're not going to say, oh, you always have the same problems, right? We're going to listen and care for them. All right, there's our first one. Comments or questions? So Jesus has a centurion come to him. Jesus is approachable. He listens to him. He hears what the man says. And that brings us to our second point, right? So we need to be approachable, and then we need to pay attention. Pay attention. Jesus does two very interesting things as he's talking to this centurion. First, he understands the need. Understand the need. We need to do what Jesus does here, so we need to understand the need. The centurion says to him in verse 6, Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented. He does not ask a question, does he? He makes a statement. This is what's going on in my life. Jesus hears what he's saying. He understands what he's saying. And then he addresses the need. He says, I'll come heal him. He doesn't say, oh, well, that's a bummer. Too bad about your servant, right? He knows what the man's actually wanting. He's paying attention to the need. As we pay attention in relationships, we're going to understand the needs of others. There's days when I walk in the front door of our house, and if I'm paying attention, I can tell that something is off, right? If I look into my kitchen and my loving wife is over there making dinner and she has a spoon in one hand and a child in the other, I can do something to help, right? If I'm paying attention, I can go over there and either take the spoon or the child. Since Jess is a much better cook than me, I will probably take the child, right? And that way she can finish the meal. If I'm not paying attention, and I come into that same situation, I can either say or do something that is going to escalate the tension, right? So we have to pay attention to what's going on when we enter any situation. Jesus is paying attention. This guy comes up, he's upset, he says, I have a servant who's dreadfully ill, they're going to die. And Jesus doesn't go, well, have a nice day, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, right? No, he says, I'll come heal him. Jesus hears what he says, he understands the need, and this requires actually listening to what is said and thinking it through about what we might do about it. Let me give you an example. Someone comes into you and they say the car doesn't fit in the garage. This is a statement of information, right? It's not a question, it's not a request, it's a statement of information. But there's definitely a need behind it, right? Especially if the reason the car doesn't fit in the garage is because all of my projects happen to be in the middle of the garage. If you noticed that the van was parked outside for a while the last week or so, it's because John had projects in the middle of the garage. So, if we have something like that, and we know what they're saying, what are they saying? I want to be able to put the car in the garage, right? So we need to, and if we can do something about it, right? Jesus understood what the centurion was saying, and he didn't stop there. And what I love is that Jesus, he understood the need, and then he expressed the need. He says to the centurion what the centurion wants to hear. What did he want to hear? He wanted Jesus to do something about his sick servant. And so Jesus says, I will come and heal him. Jesus addresses the need. He expresses the need. To make sure we've understood, we say it back to them. This allows a person that we are addressing to know we have heard and understood. For example, she says to you, I have washed several loads of laundry today. That's a need, right? What do we respond? Can I help you fold it, right? This is what she's... Guys, just a clue. If she tells you that she's done lots of laundry today, she's probably asking for help folding it. Just saying, all right? Either that or we're going to do our typical manly stuff and shove, right? You know, stuff, shove. And good. Clothes are in the drawer. As long as they're in the drawer, we're not crying. Someone says to you, I have a big test coming up, right? Can I help you study for it? When your kids were little, they might have said, I don't understand my homework. What are they doing? They're asking for help, right? So we need to hear what they're saying. We need to understand what they're saying and then repeat back to them what they're wanting, right? That's communication. Okay? We're saying to them, she says, I've done a lot of laundry today. Can I help you fold it, right? I hear what she's saying. I understand what she's saying. I'm expressing it back to her, right? Or if he comes in and he says, I need you to hold something, right? Well, I put a nail in it. Oh, yeah. Go.
She might be saying, could you just make dinner since I've done all this laundry?
Sure.
She could.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, so there's a flip side to this.
Yeah.
The flip side to this is, ladies, if you want him to make dinner or fold the laundry, there's a better way to get him to do that. What did we learn last time? Say what you mean. Right? If you, we can't read minds. I wish we could. We're going to try to practice this. We're going to try to hear what you're saying, understand it, repeat it back to you. But if you just say, hey, I did a lot of laundry today. I'm going to fold it. Can you make dinner? Okay. Then we have established what needs to happen. Right?
Maybe not happy.
Good. And he may say, you don't want me making dinner because you want to live, right? So I'll go fold the clothes. Yeah. Good.
So I like the idea of an open-ended question rather than saying, you know, Jess is over there, she's got the spoon and she's got the baby, and you come in and you're better grabbing the baby, but maybe the baby has pooped her diapers or his, and so she wants to change the diapers. So is it better?
I don't know, she'd want me to change it, but go ahead. No, go ahead.
Is it better to say, what can I do to help? Because you may not know what...
Sure.
You may look at the situation and go, well, here, she needs help over here, but then you really need help over here.
Great. So this is where there's a verse in Peter, really important verse. It says, to husbands, dwell with your wife according to knowledge. Right? And that's where this comes in. Because for my bride, if I go in and I say, how can I help you? That can be frustrating to her because she's like, well, look around, buddy. Can't you see there's stuff to do? Figure it out, right? So that's my bride, though. Some of you ladies might be like, I want him to ask because I don't want him to just grab something and start doing something. It might not, you know, it could mess up what I'm doing, right? So guys, you need to know your wife and you need to know when you need to ask and when you need to just grab and do, right? But you're right that there could be a situation where it's like, I see that there is chaos. How would you like me to help with it? Shall I add to it? No, don't add to it. Would you like me to wind the kids up for you? No. Yeah, wrong.
You said right back to the review, men communicate to give and receive information. Why they need to say, I did the clothes, can you help me put them away?
Or yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Then have me guess.
Yeah, no, great point. So this is why we're talking about it, right? Because there's two sides to this, right? As men, we need to hear, think, okay, what are they trying to communicate? Ladies, we need you to tell us what you want, right? We need you to say what you mean, okay? If you want help with the laundry, tell us. Most of us will do it.
Husbands, do
Yeah, but and husbands need you too. But
if it was a wooden spoon, she made me get ready to spank
you. There you go, right? and she will probably love it if you take that job on, right? So again, don't come into a situation and assume, but also know your bride and what she needs. No.
Yeah, she'll say that she needs something. I won't respond. I'll just go do it.
Yeah.
Well trained.
And so in that situation, again, she's communicating to connect. That means what she doesn't want to hear from you, fellas, is nothing. She wants to hear something. So if she says, hey, I would like you to go to the store and get milk, you say, okay, I'm going to go to the store and get milk. Everyone knows what's happening. That's communicated. If someone says something, if Jess says, can you get Andrew dressed, and I just disappear, well, she doesn't know if I'm getting him dressed or if I'm in the bathroom, right? So I need to say, hey, yes, I will do that, and I'll go get him dressed.
Yeah, that's a mistake. Because you come back with the milk, and then you get the, oh, I forgot to tell you, I need this and this too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is how we get ourselves in trouble, right?
So in other words,
now I'm mad.
What?
In other words, now I'm mad because you didn't tell me you were leaving.
Yeah. So in other words, we need to clarify, the parameters. Is there anything else I need to get to the store while I'm there? Or any other task I should perform while I'm out and about?
Wait until I get to store and call on the phone.
And we talked about that last time, right? We talked about setting expectations and establishing responsibility. Right? Good.
I do like Bill does. He calls on us before he comes home and says, do you need anything else?
Yep. I do the same thing. Because usually there's at least one more thing, right?
Yeah. You say there's two sides. There's two aspects. Well, I'd like to differ on that one. I actually think there's four, possibly eight, because you have the four different personality types.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And that's affected both ways. That was one of the things that they did with Daryl and I before we got married. We wanted to make sure we understood which personality type the other person was.
And so that goes back to dwell with each other according to knowledge. You need to know who you married and how they need you to show up in a certain situation, right? Now, what do you need to do in order to figure that out? Communicate. Talk about it. Do the work to know your spouse so that you can do these things. Because if you don't, folks, all of us know that in our marriages, we can drive each other crazy. Right? We don't want to live like that. The whole point is we want to learn to communicate, to share with one another so that we can do what? Bring glory to God and serve Him together. Right? That's what He's calling us to do. Good. So Jesus expresses the need. These are statements people can make and have made to express their need. And if we're paying attention, we understand what they're saying. We repeat it back to them. So the lesson is when we pay attention, we will be able to hear a need expressed and do something about it. When we pay attention, we'll be able to hear a need expressed and do something about it. There's a third thing that we learn from Jesus here, and that is give praise. Give praise. So all the things we've talked about have to come before you give the praise. You have to be approachable, right? If you're going to praise someone, because you got to be around them. You have to pay attention, because if you're going to give someone praise, it needs to be meaningful. You need to have paid attention to what it is. The centurion demonstrates an incredible amount of faith in what he says. We're not going to spend the time to explain it necessarily why, but basically this centurion understands the triune Godhead in what he's saying, that he understands the authority of Christ in his statement. That's huge for this Roman centurion to understand. And so Jesus praises him. He says, I've not seen this great faith, not even in Israel. And there's three interesting things about what Jesus says here. The first is that this praise is public. It is public. Look at what Jesus says in verse 10. It says, when Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed. Jesus hears what the centurion says. He turns and to everyone, he says, assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such faith, not even in Israel. It's public. We need to be willing to praise the special people in our lives publicly. Publicly. Sometimes people do this nowadays through social media. They'll post on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whatever they have, right? They'll say something like that. I heard a story one time about a man who wanted to brag about his wife, so he took out a full-page ad in their local newspaper and wrote a letter about his wife. Okay? Cool. You can do things like that. The point is, publicly praise your spouse. Publicly praise your children. Your children, no matter what their age, need to know you are proud of them. Doesn't matter their age. They need to know you're proud of them. They also need to hear you say that to other people, right? And to them. Okay? When a friend has a victory in their life, when they have a win, praise them, right? When your spouse has an achievement, praise them, even if that achievement is putting up with you for another year, right? Why do we give anniversary cards? They are congratulation cards to our spouse for putting up with us, right? That's what an anniversary card is. Hey, you did it, babe. You got through another year of me, right? So the idea is that public praise encourages and strengthens a relationship, okay? Now, some might say, well, I'm not comfortable doing that. If it's something that your spouse needs, get comfortable. Now, you might say, if I did that, she would kill me. He would kill me. Okay, this goes back to dwelling with them according to knowledge, right? You need to know your spouse, okay? You need to know your kids. Don't embarrass them. That's not going to help. But praise them publicly if that's something that is going to be beneficial to them.
Pastor, can I give you a little story?
Absolutely.
Because it was pretty incredible. Our daughter, they gave us a run for our money when she was in high school. And I'll make this very short, but she really, we were the enemy, if you will. Mm. And she was a jock. She was a track star. She was on a USA team that went to Europe. And before she left, this is the day you could go down the concourse and see them off at the plane.
Yeah.
I wrote her a letter thinking of everything positive I could think about from the day she was born to the present. I had it sealed. She didn't even hardly want to give us a hug goodbye. And I grabbed her by the arm and I reached in my, I said, don't open this until you get, I think it was Sweden where they were landing. Sweden. The next morning, I believe it was Saturday, Sharon had something to do. I was home alone. The phone rings. Janae is on the phone. Collect. Sweden. And crying and carrying on how sorry she was, et cetera, et cetera. And I've never forgot that lesson.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, the phone bill back then was $400. I would have mortgaged my house to have her keep talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the point is that
praise
everything I could think of.
Yeah. Yeah. You praise the praiseworthy. Our God tells us what he thinks of us. He says, you're accepted in the beloved. He says, I chose you before the foundation of the world. He says, I bought you with a price. He tells us our worth. And we need to learn from that to tell the important people in our lives, tell them their worth to us, right? Whether that's a spouse, whether that's a child, whether that's your friend who's always there for you, whoever it might be. So we praise publicly. Now the second thing is just as important, and that is specific. He praises specifically. Mike, you were saying you wrote down all these different things. Jesus says, I have not found such great faith. He's very specific. He doesn't say, did you get a load of this guy? He's amazing. Why is he amazing? Right? Because of his great faith. Jesus is very specific. We need to do the same. Now, this needs to be genuine. Okay? Don't make it up. Pay attention so that you know what you're praising them for. And as we're around people, as we're paying attention, we look for things to praise them for. Maybe it's something they've done for us. Maybe it's a character trait. Maybe it's something else. The point is, we don't praise generally, we praise specifically. Let me give you an example. You are a kind person. Okay? That's a great affirmation. That's not specific. It's general. Specific would be, you showed kindness today when you did blank. Or, I saw when you did blank and that was really kind. That's specific. Okay? It's a specific thing. This is also, we're not praising someone for a physical characteristic. We don't go, wow, it's so amazing that you have blonde hair, because you know what happens to blonde hair? Usually it turns brown and then gray and then falls out, right? So, you don't praise them for a physical characteristic that's going to change. You praise them for a character quality that is being displayed in their life. Okay? So, for example, if your child, let's say you have a child who gets angry, and they tell you, I want to try to not get angry. Okay? What you do is you watch and you notice when they had a situation where they normally got angry and they don't. And then you praise them for that, right? You reinforce that behavior. So specific praise shows our attention and our care. When we praise specifically, they know we're paying attention to them and they know that we care for them, right? Any comments or questions before we do the last one?
To go back to your original illustration of the kids who clean the house.
Yeah.
I think that there's a tendency to, especially with children, to emphasize their faults so much that they get to where they think, well, I can't do anything good, so I might as well do something bad.
Yes. Good point. Good point.
But if we can praise the good and reinforce the good without pointing out constantly, because kids are your kids. They'll do things wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sinners make sinners.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a really good point, right? If we're constantly nitpicking or pointing out negative behavior, there's a verse that says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. You know, we provoke our children to wrath when nothing's ever good enough. Right? When we're constantly saying, well, yeah, that was great that you changed the oil, but you could have put, you could have wiped up everything afterward.
Did you have to use the cheap stuff?
Yeah, did you have to use the cheap oil? if not, because this discourages our kids. Now, here's the thing. It doesn't change when they get older. If we're still pointing out the negative when they're older, it has the same discouraging effect. Yeah? So we need to be specific. Yeah. Good. Any others?
Well, I think in that same vein, parents should realize, even if they don't verbally praise their kids, I think they have to realize, show their love in some way.
Yeah.
In other words, I didn't know or that you did this, but I love you for this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there's times when it needs to be complete, not connected to a situation. Just grab your kid and say, hey, you need to know I'm proud of you. And then they'd be like, for what? For being you, for existing, right? I'm proud of you because you're my kid. And I'm always going to be proud of you, right? They need to hear that.
Especially for, like I say, if you're a child of, like say my father was a perfectionist, and you don't always live up to the standards. So I think it's important, obviously, from the parent's side to at least show your appreciation, your care, that you value them.
Yeah.
And not slough them off. Because I have a friend of mine who's really messed up because he tried to show... He could do strange things in front of his dad growing up because he wanted his dad's love. He was all he was doing was sitting there watching sports.
Mm.
It messes people up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so two things. If you're sitting here and you're going, I have messed up. I want you to know, as long as you're breathing, you have a chance to change it. Okay? You say, well, my kids won't even talk to me, or my kids have nothing to do with me. They've all moved across the country, right? So what? Right? If you need to show up on their doorstep and say, hey, I want you to know that I'm proud of you, and I just flew across the country to tell you that, that'll make an impact. Now, they may not fall into your arms and start crying, but is it important? Yeah. Relationships are important, right? And so we want to communicate this to them. Now, the last thing that Jesus does is really interesting and a little bit unexpected, and that is he makes a comparison. He makes a comparative statement. He says, I have not seen such great faith, not even in Israel. Huh. Aren't we told not to compare? We think that, but there is time when comparison is appropriate. Okay. Now, notice, Jesus doesn't say, I have not seen such great faith, not even in my disciples. He doesn't make it personal. He says, not in Israel, right? It's a general comparison. Okay? So, in Proverbs 31, we see this twice with the Proverbs 31 woman, right? First, in verse 10, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. He's talking about, it's a comparison statement. She's worth more than rubies. Okay? But it's not a comparison to another person, right? It's to her worth is far above rubies. In verse 29, he says, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Now, he's not saying, man, Sally's a pretty good wife, but you're better than Sally. Right? It's not a personal thing, right? It's a general thing. Now, some people might say, well, what's the point of that? Right? Well, it makes you feel good. It's a value statement. You're worth more to me. I am so encouraged by the things that you do. I'm so blessed by the things that you do. In my opinion, you're better than anybody else. Right? In Proverbs 10, it talks about two sons. It says, he who gathers in summer is a wise son. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. It's a comparative statement. Okay? But it's an honest statement. So if we're going to make a general comparative statement, it needs to be honest. We can't say, you know, you're the best knife sharpener in the existence of the world. They might not be, okay? Let's be honest about your if you're going to give praise, okay? And so here's the thing. The purpose of this comparison is simply to the encouragement of the individual. It's encouraging. To hear, you know, I've never seen someone mow a lawn like you do. That's such a blessing. Right? It's an encouragement to them. We want to encourage people. Your worth is far above rubies. Well, that's not really a beneficial statement. Well, thank you for that. So you're saying if you had a handful of rubies or me, you'd pick me. Okay, right? It's an encouragement, right? You excel every other woman in the world. It's an encouragement. It's a statement of value, right? And so the important people in our lives need to know that they're valued. They need to know that they're valued. And that's what this is all about. Jesus has this guy come to him who he probably should have just ignored from a human standpoint. And so he listens to him and he cares for him and he praises him. And we need to praise as well. That's what this is about. Okay, final thoughts or comments?
Well, with regards to him praising publicly.
Yeah.
He had just come down from a mountain and multitudes were following him. And I wonder how many other centurion soldiers there were around him. So, if that be the case, and his disciples were most likely there. So he had a group of people around. That could that be why he just says not even in Israel, so that those Jews who had been following him would hear that? Not take it personal, but
sure. Yeah, so it's a twofold thing. He's not putting them down. He's encouraging them as well as this person. Right. He's giving a standard to strive for, mm-hmm. a standard of faith. Right? Because we, thousands of years later, right, we read her worth is far above rubies, and it makes us go, yeah, you know, I want to view my wife like that. And it makes wives like, I want to be, you. It elevates everyone, right?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, good. Any other thoughts?
Well, I think your compliment or statement can vary based on the audience. So spouse, you're going to be in a certain type of thing, like that would be like you're a treasure to me.
Yeah.
To a child, you might say, yeah, you are the best knife sharpener I've ever seen. To,
yeah,
you know, even though there's not necessarily truth to it, but you're praising for what they did, even though they may be terrible at it.
Yeah. Well, and it's like when you're teaching them how to ride a bike. And you go, good job. You're not saying that you're riding that bike better than anyone else. You're saying you're doing a good job for you, right? And so, but you don't say that. You know, you're doing a pretty good job for someone who learned how to ride a bike. No. You say, wow, you're doing great, buddy. Keep going. Right? It's elevating. It's, yeah. And so it's a good point that it's going to look different in different contexts.
Just more. When Hannah was very small, well, not even in school yet, she was in a swimming thing, and she was in the first lane, and she's giving it everything she got, one lap, right? She gets up all the way up there and said, how did I do? I said, honey, you were the first in this lane. She just made it, boy.
Completely truthful, right? Yep. And so, but that's the thing. What are we trying to do with praise, right? We're elevating. We're elevating our kids, we're elevating our spouse, we're elevating our friends and our neighbors. Does anybody like to be around someone who puts them down all the time?
No.
Anyone?
No.
What about someone who's always encouraging? Don't you just kind of gravitate towards them unconsciously, hope maybe they'll say something encouraging to me, right?
Barnabas
did that all the time, right? Yeah, so we want to communicate well. And if we're going to do that, we need to, as we said last time, say what we mean, but we need to praise the praiseworthy. Mm-hmm. Folks, I don't know how all of your relationships are in your lives, but I will challenge you to praise the people in your life, and it will make a difference. So our last thing that we talk about is we want to copy what Jesus did. And that just means to be someone who praises and encourages others. What changes do I need to make? So you have a place there that you can write something down if you would like. You can do that later or now. Whatever you want to do. All right. Let's go.
Pastor, I think it's important, though, to realize that Jesus' praise wasn't based on the opinion of those around him.
Amen.
Because the Jews basically didn't like the Roman soldiers.
Yeah.
But Jesus knew what the individual needed and praised them anyway.
Yes.
So what's important is the need of the individual, not the opinion of the surrounding people.
Yeah, great point. Great point. Yes.
Yet they were listening.
Yeah, but Jesus wasn't saying, nobody else. Jesus wasn't pandering to the crowd, if you know what I mean, right? He never did. But we sometimes are so tempted to do that, right? If we see our child doing something and everyone around us is saying, well, they shouldn't be doing that. Well, if I don't have a problem with them doing that, let them do it, right? And you want to praise the person, okay? Don't worry about what everyone else is thinking. Praise the person. Elevate the person.
Yeah. I think also Jesus often, you know, through this type of thing, talking to people, he showed that there was value in people that were not Jewish. Mm. For example, the Samaritans.
Yeah.
The Romans. You know, he was indicating to people, even his disciples, they were aghast that he would go through Samaria. Because Jews always went, they would go north and then they would cross around and go to the Jordan River Valley, and then they'd go up and then they'd go to Galilee. They would not go through Samaria because they were considered subhuman.
Yeah.
So I think he was showing you, hey, they're people, they have value, they may not be the same as you, but they have value.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things we do with our praise, right? We're communicating to people, you have value to me, right? It's encouraging, it's elevating. Good.
I heard a story one time was, like the ugly American. The guy went to India and he got over there and he says, what's the matter with you people? You got animals running in the middle of the street and oh, they're dirty and all this kind of stuff. And that wasn't good. The other guy took an approach. He says, tell me about those animals that are walking. What is that all about? Tell me why. And so the guy tells him why and all that. And then he says, well, my religion, I believe that Christ came, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So, different ways you could irritate
people. Turn people
Exactly. We, again, what are we, we're talking about communication. Why? Because if I say something without a lot of thought behind it, I can hurt people. I can turn them off to Christ, right? I can cut off relationships all by what I've said. What does Scripture say? Death and life are in the power of the tongue, right? James says, behold, what a great fire a little tongue can kindle, right? We have to be so careful with what we say. Whereas if we're speaking carefully and we're thinking about what we're saying, we have such great capacity to encourage and strengthen and uplift our brothers and sisters and those outside of the body of Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the situation that I had in my life and in my marriage, a few of you know that I do have, was involved with the band, obviously. Yeah. Gee. And when Zach got involved in the band, I didn't just drop him off and do the see ya and run. I was there to help wherever needed. Well, I ended up on the booster board. And at the end of the year, the band director recognized the people that were on the booster board. Well, here's Jack sitting there going, well, you know, you're getting all this praise, you know, what about me? So the following year, I got lots of grief for still being on the board. And so at the end of the year, the board then took it upon themselves to recognize the volunteers that went over and above. And at least that, it took that piece out of the equation, because you got your bouquet of flowers, be quiet.
But it just goes to show we, as the way God has made us, is to appreciate praise and being thanked and being encouraged, and so we want to do that.
Like Cheryl mentioned, that the recipient of that, we have different personality types. Some people like to be acknowledged publicly and others don't.
Yeah.
For example,
she
doesn't like to be given praise publicly.
Sure.
You'd have to ask her why, but
well, like in my situation, that was, you know, being recognized at the awards assembly was not why I was doing what I was doing.
And that's the thing. Most of the time, we're not praising someone because they're expecting it, right? That kind of ruins it. We're praising people because we're supposed to. That's one of the things, that examples that we see in Scripture. Good. All right.